So up next is our beloved friend, Reverend Maria Shamaya Clemente. And I often reflect on the fact that she's been my practitioner now for 28 years. And I am very grateful for that fact, and that I meet with her regularly and she prays with me, and I feel seen and heard and uplifted. So I just am really grateful for Reverend Maria in my life, and that she's been part of the life of Sterling Study Group for so long as well. And I can't wait to hear how she encourages and uplifts us today. So here we go. Here's Reverend Maria.
Thank you and good morning. I found this sign, just a little thing before I start my talk. It just makes my day. So it's here with us today as a divine reminder of what's important in the world. All you need is love and pie. Keeps me focused. So other than love and pie, what is it that we teach in Science of Mind? I know that the thought of explaining our message to some people can send us into fits of anxiety at some point, like, what do I say? So this morning we start in How to Change Your Life with what is known as What We Believe, or the Declaration of Principles. And it's wonderful to know that this is part of the evolution of Dr. Ernest thinking about what is it that Science of Mind really teaches. It is said in legend that when Ernest was getting together with a group of ministers in the 20s, that someone said, "What is it that you're about?" And at one point Ernest said, "We are a Judeo-Christian teaching and more," and then was done and sat down. And at some point someone said, "You know, Ernest, you're going to have to actually explain what the thing is." And so then we came up with what is known as the 25 word answer, and it was on the masthead of the magazine for a long time, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. Religious science is a correlation of the laws of science, the opinions of philosophy, and the revelations of religion applied to the needs and aspirations of humanity. Succinct, brilliant. Ernest was good. And then they said, "Well, Ernest, can you tell us more?" And being Ernest, there was always more. There was always something else for him to say. So we ended up with what is known as What We Believe, or the Declaration of Principles. It too lives inside of our Science of Mind magazine. It is a consistent teaching that all of us have experienced throughout all of our years in Science of Mind. It has been present with us, and it is an excellent teaching tool. It's in the magazine, always in the beginning, What We Believe. It hasn't really changed, other than sometimes it's evolved in its languaging. Anyway, that is in the magazine. It's in this book. It's also in a little tiny book, which is one of my favorite things to teach from. It's called What Religious Science Teaches. And it's the same as what we're exploring in How to Change Your Life. Okay, breathe. With all of that being said, we're going to start at the beginning, which is always an excellent place to begin. The initial thought from Ernest is to go back to first cause, to begin there. So my job this week is the line, "We believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one, indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause." Wow, that's a mouthful. What does that mean? We believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one, indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause. To me, what it really means is that we rest on this foundational element of oneness, one, only one. Everything arises from the one, that cause, everything returns to that one first cause. Mostly what I've discovered in all of these decades is not what it means, but how does it make me feel? How does it make you feel as you reflect on your dance with the divine throughout all of the years of your practice and study? Reflecting on where you began in your version of what I believe. Many of us came from some form of organized religion before we found ourselves here in what is lovingly known as disorganized religion. That many of us came from some sense of this is what God is and this is what you have to believe and this is the way it is. But all of us have had our own journey, our own experience with that one. And is it the place that you come from in your life? And is it the place you return to in your life? Doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter what language you use. What matters is your relationship to it and how you feel. It is a felt sense of being alive. And I know that for me, and all of the time that I've been studying and teaching and mostly practicing, there have been moments that have been such exquisite joy in seeing people awake and eyes open and hearts and minds open as you come to a new experience and a new understanding and a new felt sense of what it is to be in that one, as that one, God in me, as me, is me, and how that touches our hearts. And how it's carried us through long nights and beautiful days. There have been a lot of those moments, way too many to share. But one in particular that stayed in my mind as I was contemplating that statement for the talk this morning. I met an artist named Morgan Green in the early 1990s when I was in California. And she was what I would call California science of mind. You know, we're just like, wow, oh my God, like everything is so totally awesome. And we just really love God. And, you know, the universe like totally supports me and everything is like so good. And to me, it's just that openness and that feeling of, wow, it's just mind blowing, this thing called God. And Morgan had an amazing art studio, and she did mostly landscapes and things, but she received a commission to do a very special painting in the early 90s from something called the Kinship Alliance. And the Kinship Alliance, if you've never heard of it, which many of us probably haven't, I hadn't, the Kinship Alliance was formed. It's a group of special people who were from all professional backgrounds, each with a common concern for foster and adopted children. And they asked her if she could create a piece of art that would speak to the diversity of children's experience of what God is, not from a child-like perspective, but just from something warm and comforting, no matter what religion it was that you were raised in. And Morgan came up with this piece, and I have a huge print of it in the wall behind me, and I wasn't going to take the whole picture down, but I found a picture of it from a magazine where Morgan was featured on the cover. And on this piece is all of these different experiences of what God is. And the painting is called Holy Spirit, Thou Art Welcome. And you may see things you recognize in here. Of course, we know Jesus as the Good Shepherd stands there in the middle. You've got your Ten Commandments there on stone. You see Buddha there, and behind him is green Tara or white Tara, the female incarnation of Buddha, you see Muhammad on a horse whose face is covered because he is too holy to look upon. There's the three faces of God from the Hindus. There's the Virgin of Guadalupe up there. There's Kokopelli in there. Somewhere in there, if you really took a magnifying glass, you would find the symbol of the science of mind. There's the rainbow god from the Hopis. There's Kuan Yin. There's the Rastafarians. There's the all-seeing eye of Ra. And there's the iguana lizards from Australia. It's extraordinary. I think she said there were 23 different representations of Holy Spirit. We believe in God, the living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute and self-existent cause represented here on this piece of art in all of its magnificent faces. Well, not all, but as many as you could get on the canvas. And what you can't see, unless you really squint and look very close, but you really can't see, is that the picture is divided into six sections. And the idea was that the original painting, those six panels, could be tucked into some sort of a travel bag, and she could travel the world with this painting and bring it to different foster homes and different schools and share it with children and have them talk about, what does God mean to you? And I remember that I got to go on one of those trips. And what I remember was that it was a yellow Volkswagen Beetle, and Morgan was very tall, and there were six panels, and she had them in there, and we went and talked to some kids, and she shared all of the experiences that were represented on the painting. And I found that it was really enlightening, comforting for the children, very friendly. It made God very friendly. For those of us that spend so much time as adults combating one another over whose version of God is better and my God can kick your God's butt, the idea of just children going, oh, look at the shepherds, look at the horse, and feeling that familiarity and comfort with that which resides all around us and within us. So we believe in that God in all of its disguises, in all of its representation, with all of its, it matters not what that is. Woof, woof, there it is. Woof, there it is. Woof, there it is. That's God. And the idea of what we believe is so incredibly important in the midst of everything, the felt sense of being alive. How you feel, even though you are no longer a child, when you see the face of God, when you experience that face of God, when you see it here in everyone's face, God is alive and well because we are alive and well. And as Mary Oliver, a poet, once said to us, really, the most important thing in life, whether you consider it to be God or spirituality or religion or whatever you call it, the most important thing is to be present to all that is. And Mary said simply, there are three things to remember, is that we must always pay attention, we must be astonished, and we must tell about it. And when we think about the experience, our dance with the divine, what could be a better felt sense of being alive? Not discussing and dividing and labeling and judging, but to just pay attention to it and be astonished by it and to tell about it. And that felt sense of being alive is so essential, and it's wonderful to remember it in those moments when you're in a yellow VW bug driving through the highways of California, you're going to talk to children, or you're sitting there in front of the news, watching whatever sort of nonsense is being dished out to you that day. You're still the spiritual bodhisattva, standing strong and tall in your teaching. You are still here to pay attention, to be astonished, and to tell about it. And I know that for many of us, in this last year and a half, which I think in dog years is 150 years, this last year and a half has felt really long. But what Mary reminds us of is still so true. We believe in God, the living spirit, almighty, one, indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause. No matter how it shows up, Holy Spirit, thou art welcome. And I found that for me, my process in the last year, my experience in the last year and a half has been to pay attention to people as they are remaining awake and aware in the midst of what is, and to still say, it's still just one. It's still just one cause. And to allow ourselves to practice equanimity, which is to say, right now, it is like this. The equanimity says that it flows, and it flows, and it flows, and we're still paying attention, and we're still astonished, and we're still talking about it. That whether it's our greatest joy or our deepest sorrow, equanimity says to just be on your mat, to pay attention, to be astonished, and to talk about it. And to not label or divide or judge, just to be present to what is. And I found that in all of my time in ministry, what was the most difficult in the past year and a half was to not be heard and to not be witnessed in that message of still being present, of still remembering it's all one. To find that wherever I went, and maybe this is true for you in your life as well, was that hearts and minds were slowly starting to close, overwhelmed by the inundation of the world and believing that that is what I need to be attention to. And boy, am I astonished by it. And boy, am I talking about it. And it's like, it's still just one. And when we close our hearts and minds to that one, and we put all of our energy in what is out there, we'd lose that sense of, felt sense of being alive. And there's so much going on in the world. What happened to you today? I go out in the woods and I'm literally listening to all of this bird song. And on the really good mornings, I'm looking up and there's truly an owl on the branch over my head. And I look up at it and it looks down at me. And I hear the bird song and I see the owl. And I go out and I look in my garden and everything that froze in the winter is returning, popping its head up, announcing itself in so many different ways, and walking out into the world. And I'm always amazed by doors opening, doors closing, and people opening doors for each other with smiles. Do you ever notice how many people open doors for each other in the world? Take note of that as you go through. And people smile when they open the door, and people smile when they walk through the door, and they say hello and good morning and thank you. Open doors, close doors. It's all this present sense of God. People laughing in lines that are much too long at supermarkets. People at the gas station just shaking their heads and, you know, like, and then we're like, well, right now it is like this, you know, and tomorrow it will be something different. And it's a moment of connection with a total stranger and seeing them and looking in their eyes, just connecting with people who feel so alone. And amazing moments, even online, in spiritual communities when microphones don't work and speakers don't work and everybody's just hanging out in the chat and saying, so what's new in you? And how's your mother? How's your son? How's your dog? How are you? You pay attention and be astonished and talk about it. Wow, we believe in this one. Isn't it amazing? And I had to laugh the other night in one group when nothing was working. She was setting up a whole new system, and the musician was like, well, there was just no microphone to be found in all the land. There was no microphone to be found in all the land. And people in the chat were just like, well, do this and do that. And then it was just like, so how are you? And everybody started to just really chat up, and then finally said, can someone tell a joke? We just need a joke. And this is the joke for the morning. What is the most spiritual animal there is? A werewolf. A werewolf. And I said, there's my motto. I am here to be an aware wolf. And as I think about that, then, to just be aware and to be present, which was what so many of us said in the beginning, to be present. And so my mission then, in this last year and a half, was how could I be that, even before I know that there was an animal that represented that. And I found myself really coming back to equanimity, flowing in, flowing out, being present to all that is, and compassion, extraordinary compassion for myself, for other people, and for all of the world. Because if we believe in God, which is one, indestructible, absolute, and self-existent, everything that is transpiring is an outpicturing of that one life. And then as we go down two sentences in what we believe, and we really focus in on this felt sense of being alive, that third sentence is really what it's about. How we practice that, that sentence says, the universe, okay, I had it just right there. okay, let me just go back to that. Sometimes the words go, okay, yes, okay. The manifest universe is the body of God. The manifest universe is the body of God. It is the logical and necessary outpicturing of God. See, some days those words, they're just right there. And some days, those days are just not right there. Let's do this properly, shall we? The manifest universe is the body of God. Is it logical and necessary? Nope. All right, let's try something else. We'll try it here. Some days. One more time with feeling. The manifest universe is the body of God. It is the logical and necessary outcome of the infinite self-knowingness of God. It is the logical and necessary outcome of the infinite self-knowingness of God. The manifest universe is the body of God. And that manifest universe is imbued with, surrounded with, filled with compassion. And I found that as I was moving through a difficult time expressing myself, isn't that ironic, with people who were just shut down, that I realized this universe is about compassion. And what it said to me about this one cause, is that inside of me, when my love touches someone else's fear or pain, that becomes compassion. and that my work, my service in the world is to offer that compassion to all beings, including myself when I forget things, and to each other and to all of the world. And so much of what we've experienced in this last year and a half is this feeling of loss of empathy and compassion. And that part of being willing to be present to witness, to listen to everyone as they are on their experience with life, with the world, is not only to hear people, but to be willing to be changed by what I am hearing. So my heart and my mind must stay open as a reflection of that one in expression, to all that is, to remain open to what is in front of me with whatever people are experiencing. And I began this deep dive into compassionate communication as something that I had offered 25 years ago to people, and I felt it was really essential right now. That being compassionate with other people, whatever they are going through, we cannot change the world when we are angry at what the world is showing us. We cannot change the world when we are afraid at what we are seeing. We cannot change the world when we are overly upset with what is transpiring. We can be that change when our hearts and minds are open to that Holy Spirit, and we are experiencing and expressing love, touching every point of existence. Can we extend that compassion to people we disagree with? Can we express that compassion to people who are doing things that we find to be harmful or distressing? Can we express that compassion as a reflection of that one, no matter what is transpiring around us, to be in that space of equanimity? And I found that even the most spiritual of people in many groups I talked with said, no, just no. How can we do that? To touch back into that sense of awe that I saw in this painting, awe that I saw in the children's eyes when they saw this painting, awe when I stand and look at the owl, awe when I see people open doors and laugh, awe no matter what, awe when I see the world going through what it is going through because the manifest universe is the body of God, and the spiritual warrior stands in that knowing, cannot look away, cannot step away, can only stand in that and knowing that right now it is like this because this too is the divine. I believe in that spirit. I believe in that God, and this too is God, no matter what is transpiring. And I think that if that is our practice in the world, if we teach anything in science of mind, is to be present to it right now. And I know that for many of us, it feels difficult. Although we've been here before, we've all of the age where we've all seen some things in our life and we've been through difficult times. But to have a teaching that says, this too is the way that spirit is showing up because it is the logical outpicturing of the infinite self-knowingness of God. Infinite self-knowingness of God. It isn't just when we like it. It isn't just when it's pleasant. It isn't just when it's easy. It's still God. And so I want to leave you with that thought. And in the second part of this conversation, I want to talk a little bit about how we can further practice the presence of awe, and how to be spiritual warriors in the midst of all that is. And to remember that Holy Spirit is welcome in all things, at all times, in all ways, because that's what we are. And so I'm not allowing myself to be moved. When things flow, I'm standing where I'm standing, and I'm standing with all of you. And I know that together, we are that face of God in the world. We are what community looks like. We are what Sangha looks like. We are what life looks like, all of us. It's really quite amazing. So, thank you, and namaste.